San Diego's talk radio leader, 760 KFMB presents It's Your Money and Your Life. For the next hour, Richard Muzio and Joe Vecchio will educate and inform you on matters related to your financial future, your life, and your leisure. Now, with It's Your Money and Your Life, here are Richard and Joe.
All right. Good evening. My name is Joe Vecchio, your co-host, announcer, and producer, coming to you from KFMB with 50,000 watts of power. We're heard not just in San Diego County, but Orange County, L.A. County, up the coast of Seattle on a good night, and out to the desert. And my colleague and co-host tonight is off. He's at a public speaking engagement, but his name, well, he is a CPA extraordinaire. He's a marathon runner. He's a philanthropist. He's a best-selling author, and he's a family office expert and to several high net worth families. His name is Richard Muzio. And Richard, you have a great time at your speaking engagement. But, you know, the name of the show is It's Your Money and Your Life, and nothing is more important about life than health, and especially mental health. And it's a subject that just does not get covered sufficiently or adequately, I think, by most media these days. So that's what we're going to cover tonight. But before we get into that, I just want to thank my two brothers. They're pushing 50 years old, these two. They both came out here for 4 days this past week, and I think they did some wonders for their mental health. They got away from the families and the jobs. They work hard, and they just went down to the boardwalk and the beach. They rode the roller coaster. These guys are almost 50 years old, I'm telling you, eating ice cream at Nieder Frank's there, talking to Slow-Mo, the slow-motion rollerblader, that fellow who's another interesting story. Bill Walton rolls up on the boardwalk on he's in the 30th mile of his bike ride, and he stops, and we take some pictures with him. So they just had a great time, especially flirting with all the waitresses at every restaurant we went to. We just had a great time. So Bud and Dom, thanks for flying out here, and we'll do that again soon. But time to get into our show. We've got three important guests from San Diego County. The first guest is a is Alfredo Aguirre, LCSW. Good evening, Alfredo. How are you?
Great. It's good to be on your show, Joe.
Thank you. Can you give us a little bit about your background before we get into it? Because tonight we've got a real nice cross-section of people in the mental health space in San Diego. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. So I'm the behavioral health director for the County of San Diego. I've worked in the community mental health system for two counties over 30 years. I was in Northern California. I grew up in Northern California, and that's where I first started doing the work. I started out as a social worker working with adolescents and families, and kind of moved into management. And I was the responsible for children's mental health in San Mateo County. And then I was recruited to come here in San Diego, do a similar job here in San Diego as children's mental health director about 14 years ago. And since then, a lot has evolved, and I am now the director of behavioral health services for the county.
Right. And you're an LCSW. So for the general public, that means what?
A licensed clinical social worker. So I got my master's in social work at UC Berkeley, and then I decided to work with children and families, and I think I benefited from that experience. I think it's helped me be a better manager.
And I also see you have several awards here from the Bipolar Foundation and San Diego County's Mental Health Stigma Reduction Media Campaign. We can get into all that a little later and publish some very important articles. So welcome. What do you think compelled you to get into the mental health field yourself in your life?
Well, I like to joke that when I was thinking about being a lawyer, but my law school admission test was so low, I said I better get into something else. And so, you know, I always was interested in helping people. I was always interested in community work. In fact, initially when I got into social work school, I thought about being a community organizer, and decided to move more into counseling services mm-hmm. with children and families. And so I did some work in East Oakland. I speak Spanish, so that helped. And I actually improved my Spanish because my parents reminded me that I had lost so much of it. So that really helped me. And I just really enjoy the field. And some of the things you mentioned, some of the achievements, I couldn't have done it without your other guests that are here with you today. And it's really a community effort.
You know, Lincoln used to say, blessed are the peacemakers, but I also like to add in the caregivers, because those are very special people, I think. When you find people dedicated in that field, You're not going to find nicer, kinder, better people as far as I'm concerned. So, but let's turn to our next guest, who is Jeffrey Rowe, MD. And Jeffrey, why don't you tell us a little bit just about, well, welcome of, first of all.
Well, thanks, Joe. It's great to be here.
And tell us a little bit about yourself, who you are, what you do.
Okay. I'm a child psychiatrist and currently the clinical director of psychiatry at Rady Children's Hospital. And also I'm the head of child psychiatry for UCSD Department of Psychiatry. And I, for about 15 years, worked with Alfredo Aguirre as the supervising psychiatrist for the county.
And then as far as where you were raised and where you went to school and all that?
Well, I grew up in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, outside of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And after medical school, I had to find an internship and found one in L.A. County. So I worked at L.A. County Hospital for a year, then worked as an ER doc for a year. And then went to Madison, Wisconsin to do general psychiatry, and then worked in the cheese capital of the world, Monroe, Wisconsin, and found that I really needed to become more educated about child psychiatry. So I searched for a child psychiatry fellowship and ended up in San Francisco. I was there for 2 years and then came down to San Diego, and I've been here for 22 years.
Wow. So someone moved your cheese and you wound up in San Diego. Great. So I remember that book. But... And then our next guest is Shannon Jacquard, MBA, CEO of NAMI, which is the National Alliance of on Mental Illness. But welcome, Shannon.
Thank you.
And can you tell us a little bit about your background and what you do here in San Diego?
Sure. So I am the CEO of NAMI, which is the National Alliance on Mental Illness here in San Diego. And NAMI is actually a 30-year-old organization, and we have affiliates that are throughout the nation. There's about 1,000 affiliates. Our national headquarters are in D.C., and we have a state affiliate up in Sacramento. And here in San Diego, we're actually one of the largest affiliates in the nation, and we're able to provide over 22 different programs. But our focus is non-clinical. It's all our experiences as either family members or individuals with a mental illness, helping to educate and support other people as they walk through their own shoes in the mental health.
So that's terrific. So and you're also named one of the 50 people to watch by San Diego Magazine, and you got a Channel 10 News Leadership Award, and you're also a graduate of LEAD San Diego. So you're getting a nice global view of San Diego, it looks like, and getting awarded for it. But I wanted to start with Alfredo and just drill down a little bit on the county services and some data. So I've only been here 36 years. And I always thought county mental health just really serviced people on the streets, and I'm sure it's much more than that. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about the constellation of services you provide, and we can get into some data.
Absolutely. So behavioral health services is comprised of alcohol and drug services, both outpatient recovery-based services as well as residential-based services. We also have a wide array of services that serve adults and older adults. That system ranges everything from, emergency type services to outpatient services, crisis residential, other supports in the community. We work very closely with nonprofits in the county. In fact, 80% of our services is contracted out. So we provide intensive case management. We provide support for people who are homeless or at risk of homelessness, and a number of housing supports for adults and older adults. So it is it's the complete array of services. For children and youth, we provide a similar array of services. We actually are beginning to serve more younger children, which I know Jeff Rowe is very excited about. Years ago, we hardly served anybody under 5 or even under 12. Now is looking at statistics, and we're looking at something of like 12 to 14% of our children's population is 12 and under, which is, I think, pretty good when you compare us with other parts of the state. We provide same thing, outpatient services, school-based mental health services, a number of prevention services, everything from gang violence prevention programs in Southeast San Diego to services that support children of in the Native American community around awareness of issues that they're going through and kind of suicide prevention activities. So we've been able to usher in more prevention services thanks to the Mental Health Services Act of 2004. Alcohol and drug has a long history of doing prevention, more community-based prevention, universal prevention. We've been able to do that with the Mental Health Service Act Which again, before 2004, we did very rarely did we do prevention.
Well, thank you, Alfredo. We'll have to take a little break right now. We'll come back and drill down on all those areas you discussed right after this. So hang on. All right, we're back with more of It's Your Money and Your Life with our special guests, Alfredo Aguirre, Jeffrey Rowe, MD, and Sharon Jacquard, MBA and CEO. And where we left off, Alfredo, we're talking about the county services and how many offices or departments are out there for if people are having an issue. If you're a national city or Encinitas, I mean, how many are out there and where can they find them?
Yeah, we have about probably over 30 alcohol and drug outpatient clinics throughout the county. We also have a number of residential clinics. We have about probably 40 or over clinics that serve the adult population throughout the county.
Wow. We also
have a number of probably about 20 to 30 outpatient clinics for children with mental health issues. Jeff might elaborate a little bit more on Rady's, because Rady's is an important provider in providing outpatient care, and also have been involved with them. They're also our inpatient provider for children. And one of the things that we are trying to do more is work with the federally qualified health clinics. These are health clinics that serve low-income populations, and making sure they develop mental health capacity as part of their primary care service that they provide for communities. So, and then we're in over 300 schools for children's mental health. We really try to get out of the traditional outpatient, come to the office, which can be kind of scary for a kid, and have services that are more accessible in the schools. So we're in over 300 schools throughout the county.
Now, is this all funded and paid for by the counties? So people, doesn't have to come out of their pocket, or if their insurance doesn't cover it, they're taken care of? Is that?
Well, we do rely on a couple of important funding sources. One, we rely on millionaires. That's Prop 63. And that's a big revenue source for our system. And again, it's a 1% tax on every million dollars worth of income of a particular individual. We rely a lot on sales tax. And when the economy is booming and it's doing good, it really brings in more revenues to mental health services and actually alcohol and drug services now. There's really no state general fund anymore. We don't go groveling to the state every year for money. It's basically really driven by the economy. We have some federal dollars. We do operate the Medi-Cal plan for specialty mental health services for the population in this county. So we were able to draw down federal dollars. And of course, with the Affordable Care Act, your Medi-Cal population is going to grow. And that, for at least for a few years, is going to be 100% federal dollars. So we won't have to necessarily use these the other revenue sources I refer to for the indigent population, people that aren't covered by insurance. They will now become more and more covered, which is, again, with parity with covering alcohol and drug and mental health services, you're going to see more people covered.
So how about numbers now? In San Diego County, population is about a little over 3 million, approximately. How many people are treated a year by the county?
We serve about 42,000 adults every year and about 18,000 children and youth, which adds up to 60. Plus, we serve another 25,000 through our alcohol and drug system, which, by the way, includes services for people who have been, who have had the experience of driving under the influence, the driving under the influence program. So that's a bit of the chunk of the alcohol and drug recipients. But total, in terms of the public behavioral health system, we're talking 60 plus 25 is $85,000 individuals served on an annual basis.
And of course, with a little more outreach, I'm sure there's more people that's why we're doing the show. I mean, hopefully it'll help drive some more people.
Exactly. And I haven't even commented on the prevention activity. It's up to us and that big campaign to reduce stigma. Yeah. And by the way, just the number for access, any of these clinics I mentioned is 1-888-724-7240. That is our access and crisis line.
Yeah.
So that's an important number for people to remember.
Yeah. And then there's a good website, NAMI San Diego, NAMI, Nickel, Apple, Metal, Icicle, sandiego.org. Right, Shannon? Mm-hmm. Okay. So NAMI, that's a great window into the whole county mental health field. And you could probably find services you need through that website.
Another website's up. 2sd.org, and that gives you a lot of information about some of the prevention activities and educational activities we're doing.
Yeah. Now, the suicide prevention program, apparently you've already trained 5,000 people to, this is open to the public and it's free, right?
Right. And we have a program called QPR, questioning persuasion. And what's the I stand for, Shannon?
Persuade response.
And QPR, excuse me, and response. So that trains basically the layperson in being able to identify early signs of suicide and being able to give them the skills to identify and help that individual access care.
Yeah. I recently watched a TED talk with a young 19-year-old student, and I didn't realize, you know, what a problem it is. He said, you know, when you lose you know, your girlfriend, or you lose a friend dies or a parent dies, you know, it's okay to be sad, because but depression is when you're feeling horrible when things are going well. And boy, that really drove it home for me. I said, "Boy, how could you feel terrible? Because I feel pretty well. I mean, pretty good most of the time. But you know, when things are going well, I feel well. People with depression really struggle. And you know, Walter Cronkite, Mike Wallace, a lot of notable people have struggled with depression. And I think more than some notable people might have a worse time of it than others, don't you think? Or for some reason,
I think people personalities that are known in the public, when they talk about their depression or their mental illness, I think it goes a long way in terms of just making it more acceptable,
making it real,
and
yeah.
People understand that it is an illness. And just builds awareness, and you know, so people are less discriminating and more inclusive. Yeah. And I know, you know, Dr. Rowe and Shannon have done some real important work in terms of getting the word out to help people understand that there is help available, and it really reduces the risk when you're having a mental illness that's not being treated. I mean, so that's really the key, is helping people get the services they need.
Yeah, that's great. So it's enlightening. I didn't realize there were that many offices out there and open to the public, and these websites are important to know. So we'll have everything posted on our website so you folks can go to iymoney.com and see everything there. And of course, you can hear this podcast commercial free on Monday when it airs. So there you have it. So we're going to eventually get over to Jeffrey Rode, MD, and talk about the children's issues. Matt, we can talk a little bit about that now, if you like. And then also the holidays, you know, the holiday blues. I know that came up. What do you folks have to say about that and the depression and everything else that people do? It seems like a very stressful time of year when it really shouldn't be. But what do you think?
Well, there's always a lot of talk around the holidays about holiday blues, and there's some truth to that holidays can be stressful. There's a lot of expectation of wonderful things happening around Christmas and Hanukkah and New Year's. And so some folks who have these high expectations can have them dashed by the reality of what can happen. I think one of the things we find, though, is actually the activity in the mental health system goes down right around Christmas because everybody's excited. And then it kind of starts to peak up again in January after that excitement is down. So the holiday blues can be stressful for everybody, but the people with serious mental illness tend to actually do okay during the holiday season, and then this afterwards when it kind of peaks up again.
They say, I think, January and February is like a pretty depressing month for some reason.
It is. It's rough.
What is it, the post-Super Bowl blues or what?
Well, Super Bowl's now in February, so I think the NFL's doing its part to help us.
Well, if you watch the Chargers long enough, you might get a little depressed, but anyway, we'll battle through that. Right. But so it is. It's kind of a post-holiday thing, you think?
Yeah, the other thing that goes on for kids, you know, I'll just talk about kids, is that the kids are off. They have their winter break. They might go skiing. They might just be real excited about what they're going to get for Christmas. It's fun. Family comes, which can be a double-edged sword. Family can be fun or family can be stressful. And then when they get back to school, for the kids, there's a long time between the end of their winter break and spring break. And so they already know what's going to happen in class. So it's just a time of deflated expectations. I don't want to overstate it and say that there's a big wave of mental health problems. But in our hospital units and outpatient units, we find that kids aren't coming for care that much during the winter break, and then it picks right back up in January.
Yeah. And then we had a discussion before we got on the microphones here about the number of stressors that can occur within families. And ultimately, if you get beyond four, almost any of us would probably need some professional counseling or help. And you wanted to address that a little bit?
Well, yeah, we were talking about before about stigma and is the economy causing people to be more depressed, or is there a single thing that causes people to be more depressed? And I think it's good to know that it's never one thing. It's always two or three or four things that start to overwhelm a person's capacity to rebound. Most of us have a lot of resilience. We can fight back from things. We can deal with stress. But when you get too much stress, and the magic number turns out to be four stressors of loss of a loved one, loss of a job, having to care for an elderly family member who's not doing well, substance abuse, child illness. So there's many different stressors. But once a person has four of these very serious stressors, that really takes a big toll on their both physical and mental health. Mm-hmm. Joe, have you heard about the Adverse Childhood Experience Study?
Have not.
Ooh, it's a big deal. It's a big deal. It's done here at Kaiser Hospital.
Good. You know what? Let's hold that thought right there, because they'll want to hear this after the break. So we'll come right back with more of It's Your Money and Your Life right after this. Hang on. All right, we're back with the second half of It's Your Money and Your Life. And I usually say at this point over to Richard to thank all of our sponsors, but since he's not here, that I will have to do that. So thank you to UBS Bank, one of our main sponsors. They're in La Jolla, too. Michael Caranta. And Drew Friedes, we thank them very much. Cost Segregation Initiatives and Joel Greshkin, we thank them. Business Valuations Limited and Carl Sheeler. Also, he's been a guest on our show. Paul Polito and Don Epic, Polito Epic CPAs up in Carlsbad. Regions Bank, Sean Puckett, best bank in town, community bank in town. Signature Analytics and Jason Kruger. And lastly, Brenda Geiger, one of our great estate attorneys, also a great sponsor of the show. So we thank all of them very much for their support in allowing us to do what we do, to provide our award-winning It's Your Money and Your Life. For folks who hadn't heard, we won 3 First Place Press Club Awards. I should actually say that at the open, and I think I'm going to start doing that. But anyway, back with the rest of our show. We left off with Dr. Rowe here about this Kaiser study. So what was that about, Jeffrey?
Okay, I'll speak about it generally. There's probably 15 or 20 scholarly articles written about this. But essentially what happened is Kaiser was running a hypertension, obesity, wellness clinic and found out that the people that were having trouble keeping the weight off, those people, to a large extent, had multiple adverse childhood experiences, being exposed to domestic violence, a family member who was abusing substances, their own child abuse, both physical, sexual, and neglect, a single parent, a parent who was in prison, so multiple different adverse childhood experiences. Mm. It turns out if you had 4 or more, your rate of later physical health problems went way up. Obesity, hypertension, cancer, heart disease, sexually transmitted disease, and that group of people with more than 4, really above, definitely above 6 of those exposures, died at a younger age, at around age 55 instead of 75. So it turned out that adverse childhood experiences were very closely correlated, not necessarily causative, but correlated with early death and a lot of illness. So the reason to bring that up is to show that the more stresses a person has, the more it can impact your life. And that is often what we find when people are coming to seek services, is that they don't have one problem. They have 4, 5, or 6 problems. And that makes the care very complicated.
So there is a mind-body health connection. Obviously, your mental health affects your physical health and probably vice versa, right?
Absolutely. There's no doubt about it.
You know, now, you mentioned childhood illness, how that impacts the child, him or herself, and the family. So now are they working more in the mental health team to look into that?
Well, I've been at Rady Children's Hospital for about a year now, and one of the things I've been very impressed with is the number of children we have in our county who have very serious illnesses, gastrointestinal illnesses, cancer, lung illnesses, diabetes, really serious medical stuff. But my part in that is not to treat the medical part, but I get called in when the children have mental health problems and then their families have mental health problems because of the stress, because of the associated problems of trying to care for and support a child who's really in serious trouble. That has been very impressive to me, and I'm real impressed with how medical illness can impact not just the child's mental health, but the rest of the family's mental health.
Mm. So it's great to, I guess it's a constellation of problems now. It's not just one thing, and right?
Right, and going to your comment about the mind-body connection, it's one of the things I'm trying to do at Rady's is try to bring mental health services, who had been mostly county-supported and county-oriented, into being more of an integrated partner with the medical people, and the medical people want it. Mm. They really want to have psychological and psychiatric support in their clinics with their families that are struggling.
Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of success stories out there, right? I mean, we were talking about illness, but there's a lot of health that comes out of addressing the illness, right?
Absolutely, especially the earlier get in there to help. The longer a person suffers with multiple problems, the more they develop kind of secondary patterns to try to adjust to the stress. And then those secondary patterns can get kind of crystallized or mm-hmm. calloused. And then you have all this layering on top of the original problem. So mm-hmm. the longer it takes to get in there, the harder it is.
Yeah.
And getting in early, if done sensitively and effectively, can be very wonderful, both for the mental health care of the problem of the family, but also the medical care. The medical care gets better.
Now, I guess the real dilemma is if you have a friend or family member who you think really needs help and they don't. Well, I mean, when can you you can't force someone into get counseling unless, I guess, they're really in a bad way. I heard the standard is if they can provide food, clothing, and shelter for themselves and are not a harm to themselves and others, then there's really nothing you can do. Is that pretty much it?
Well, there's something you can do, but you're generally right. If someone is harmed to them, or a risk of harm to themselves, risk of harm to others, or gravely disabled, which is the not being able to use food, shelter, and clothing or seek it for themselves, then the government, basically Alfredo Aguirre and his delegates, mm-hmm. can step in and take over for a short period of time. Mm-hmm. But we have another group of people who aren't recognized their illness and maybe having troubles in their job or in their family relationships, and sometimes are putting themselves in a dangerous position but haven't quite done the dangerous behavior yet. Mm-hmm. And so there's been a lot of effort through multiple different ways to try to get in and convince people, hey, it's not going well. Things can go better. I know the county has IHOT, the intensive... In-home outreach team, that's been very good. A lot of people think Laura's Law would be very helpful. Laura's Law turns out to be quite a complicated thing, which could be helpful at times. And then there's just good old-fashioned engagement strategies. I don't know if you've ever had anyone talk about engagement strategies.
Mm-hmm.
But so people who are having mental health problems are stressed, and they don't feel good, and they're not happy with other people bothering them. But over time, if you keep coming back and keep being friendly and look at what motivates the person, you oftentimes can engage them in some little bit of treatment, which leads to the engagement in a lot more treatment.
So little baby steps maybe is a way to go, right?
Sometimes that's all you got.
Yeah. Anyway, I'd like to bring Shannon in on the conversation now. And Shannon, tell us about yourself. You are the CEO, and you have an MBA, and you're CEO of NAMI San Diego. Tell us about that organization.
So NAMI, again, is the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and we were founded in the 70s by mostly groups of women, mothers, who had sons that were dealing with schizophrenia, and they, at that time, had no place to turn to, and they were upset with the system. In fact, many of them were blamed for their child's illness, and they were told that they could not see their child again. Mm. So they really stood up against the system. They marched on Capitol Hill and tried to change things, and 30 years later, we're really still that support base for families and individuals with the mental illness to know that they're not alone. So actually, for example, with what Dr. Rowe just said, if somebody is not engaging in treatment, what we would tell the family is to start with educating yourself, because we know that education in the schools around mental illness is just not there yet. It's coming along. But a lot of individuals who become parents have never even entered or heard, like you were saying, about mm-hmm. the mental health system and yeah. what's available.
Yeah.
So what we say is get into one of our family-to-family classes, which is taught by family members who have a child or a sibling with a mental illness. You'll meet other people, and you'll really get these ideas. You'll know that you're not alone, because I know a lot of people aren't really comfortable telling their friends about what's going on.
And maybe the important thing is just get some coping strategies for yourself.
Correct.
Even if you can't really address the individuals that you think need help, at least you can get yourself some help or some coping strategies. So that's
right.
What happens
right.
there, right?
And it's very stressful. And a lot of times we even find that parents then focus a lot of their energies on the individual who is dealing with some of these struggles, and they miss the other siblings that are there. So we really try to help them understand that you got to remember the sister or the brother and the trauma that they're experiencing. So the whole family is kind of grieving in a way.
Yeah. So this is important. And how many offices do you have in San Diego? Or do you coordinate with the county, or how's that work? If let's say I want to seek out your services.
Yes, yes. So you can definitely call our referral line, which is 1-800-523-5933, and learn about any of our programs. Again, all of our work is non-clinical. Mm-hmm. So we really only focus on education, support, and advocacy as family members of somebody with a mental illness or as an individual with mental illness ourselves. We're based in North Park actually right now, and we have another office in Old Town. But if you call that line, you can find out where our programs are. And all of our services, are a lot of them are supported by the county, and they are countywide.
And they're on the website, namisandiego.org, right? So, right. Hey, we got to take a break right now. Come back with our last segment of It's Your Money and Your Life, so hang on.
Now, It's Your Money and Your Life on AM 760 KFMB.
We're back in the home stretch with It's Your Money and Your Life with my special guests, Alfredo Aguirre, Shannon Jacquard, and Jeffrey Rowe, MD. And we left off with Shannon, and we're talking about the actual numbers of people using services versus the actual need. You want to address that a little bit?
So one statistic that we know is that 1 in 4 individuals in any given year are dealing with a mental health struggle. So that's a lot of people. In our It's Up to Us campaign that the county has, they reported that the number of people in San Diego County could fill Qualcomm Stadium 10 times. And the reason that I wanted to bring this up is that way you know that you are not alone. There are a lot of people every day who are struggling and maybe not yet feeling comfortable to seek out services. And most of the time, or I find that that's a stigma, a shame issue. And we're here, NAMI's here, particularly to let you know that you are not alone. It is not a shame issue. And we can walk you through these steps and seeking out what treatment works for you. It's not a one size fit all. So it's not just one way to go down this path, but many ways, and we're open.
And then Dr. Robe was mentioning at the break about, it's really more of a we issue than a they issue. And you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, in my role at Rady's and UCSD, I get to teach child psychiatry fellows. And so at some point we have to talk about, well, who has mental illness? So I challenge them to look in their own family. And so I looked in my own family, and I find that I have at least 20 members in my extended family who have a mental health problem, a substance abuse problem, a learning difficulty. And so you have to realize that, you know, it's not some them over off in the corner. It's us. And that's why one of the reasons, Alfredo, is San Diego County did the It's Up to Us campaign. But the other thing that you should know, and this is reproduced and really well known, is in our lifetime, half of us are going to suffer from a mental health problem or substance abuse problem. So it's not those guys over in the corner. It's all of us could have it. Just like all of us could have colds, all of us could have sprained ankles, all of us could have depression, anxiety, ADHD, substance abuse, one of those or several of those mental illnesses.
And then we're talking about families, the why me issue. I guess, Shannon, you were addressing that families go through that, and right?
Yeah, and I think a lot of it is just because we're not educated about mental illness at a young age up to adulthood when you become mothers and fathers. And so one of the programs that we have is called Ending the Silence, and we're trying to do that.
Yeah. Alfredo, the stigma and the outreach, do we want to address that a little bit and how people can, how the county is helping to get over that, and then how the county is just one piece of the constellation of services out there, which is why we have Jeffrey and Shannon here as well. So maybe you can talk about all that a little bit.
Yes. Yeah, so we, as mentioned, we have It's Up to Us, our campaign to reduce stigma and discrimination in our county as it relates to perceptions, lack of acceptance of mental illness. A lot of that is, as Jeff has mentioned and Shannon, is being aware that it's like any other illness. And again, it's treatable. It's people can gain and achieve a degree of recovery, those that have mental illness. And so it really is a very public, universal campaign. We also have other kind of offshoots of that. We have a housing, something called Housing Matters, which really is devoted to fighting housing discrimination as it relates to people with serious mental illness. We also have another kind of through a novel booklet for the Spanish speaking community called Fotonovela, which basically talks about a Latino family that's struggling with mental illness, struggling with stigma, and the family coming together to accept it and provide support and realize that, again, treatment is available and to kind of get past the shame. Mm-hmm. But as Jeff mentioned and Shannon, certainly in the Latino culture, you see that in terms of shame and stigma, but it's really pervasive. It's really across all cultures. It just maybe plays out a little differently. And sometimes you have to think about, Jeff talked about relationship building, Shannon with the work that she does to support families. Sometimes it's just what kind of strategies can we employ to build that relationship, build trust, that they're not going to be rejected. You know, Jeff referred to people who, why they may not want to go to treatment. Well, they may have had a really lousy experience with a therapist or with a psychiatrist. Mm-hmm. So that's how they view the mental health business. And again, it's not just the county system, but it's also the private sector. A lot of people get mental health services, substance abuse services through their health plans.
Now, it must be rewarding when you have people come back who've turned their lives around and you get some success stories. I mean, you've all had that experience, right? Yeah.
And we actually have a speakers bureau involving family members and consumers, people who have had lived experience of mental illness that really have come back and talk about how they can, with better medications, with better opportunities vocationally and educationally, they've actually been able to get back on track. These are some individuals that were in college, had their first break, mm-hmm. and now they're back. They're back trying to get achieve employment, pursue a new vocation, even and go back to school. And this was unheard of, 15, 20 years ago, where people were basically seen as chronically mentally ill, and they just give them meds and put, as Jeff kind of referred to earlier, put them in a corner.
Yeah.
We've really gotten past that, and we can, people with mental illness can achieve more higher functioning lives.
Now there's about 300 almost a suicide a day in San Diego County, and teen depression is a real problem. What percentage of teens do you think suffer from serious depression problems or need some kind of counseling?
I'm going to have Jeff Rowe comment.
Okay.
Well, it turns out how you use the word depression. If you're talking about the major depression, the illness, there's about 4 to 6 to 8%, depending on how you count it, of teens who have major depression right today. If you talk about people who suffer from depressed mood, doubt, demoralization, the number's a lot higher.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you kind of a scary number. Don't be too alarmed. But when we survey high school students about those who thought about suicide during their high school years, it's about 25%.
Wow.
Now, that many people don't commit suicide. You obviously know that. But they think about it. And some do some very minor kind of attempts, and some just think about it. So it's something for us to be aware of. You should know, actually, the suicide rate in San Diego County is lower than the national average. It's about 11 per 100,000. Hmm. The national average is over 12.5 per 100,000. In our younger people, it's about 4 per 100,000. So all these efforts that Shannon does and Alfredo does and the private mental health system, a lot of that is very good work for suicide prevention. We do a lot of work to try to minimize those bad outcomes.
The military veterans, is there any crossover treatment with them, or are they mostly left to the VA? Because obviously they're having issues.
It really is a partnership with the VA and the services provided by our armed forces for people returning from service. We have something called Courage to Call, and that really is really two important things that happens there. There's a call line where veterans and returning servicemen and women can call, and family members can call to seek help. The other part is the whole navigation, how to help someone navigate the system, whether it's seeking services that the military offers either through the VA or through their specific health plan, or access the public mental health system. There are some people in the military that just aren't ready to seek services within the military structure and really go to the public mental health system. Mm. So I like to say we complement what the VA offers, what the military offers, but it's only going to work in partnership.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. Thanks for being our partners on this show. Thank you to Shannon Picard and Alfredo Aguirre and Jeffrey Rowe, MD. Really appreciate you having spent some time with us. We'll have you back again individually, perhaps, and drill down even more on what you do and get into some more good research. But I'd like to thank Justin Hart, our sound engineer, for making us sound great. Thank you to our con executive, Craig Blanking, our programming genius, Dave Sniff, and Craig Sterek came down from County Communications to help us out today. So you have a great week, everybody. We'll see you next week on It's Your Money, Your Life. Take care now.